Andaleep Wajid is a writer with a repertoire spanning young adult, romance, and horror genres. Her early influences were, as she puts it, derived from a family of storytellers, and she has eased into writing over 40 books in just 14 years and going strong. In a world where the cliche is that everyone has one book in them, Andaleep has a stream inside her and she taps into it with ease. What is her method? How did it come to define her life? And how does she keep finding the characters who dot her novels? This will be a conversation about how our careers find us at times instead of us searching for them. And Andaleep is riffing through the chapters in her life. This is episode 20 of My First Job, the podcast that covers engaging career journeys. And every single one is full of twists, turns, and insights. I am Venugopal Nair, the host of the podcast and CEO of Ideascape Communications, an advertising agency into branding, creative, and design. So sit back, and enjoy the conversation. Andaleep, welcome to the show.
Hi, Venu. Thank you for having me here.
So good to have you on the show. It's wonderful to see that in a world where people say that not too many people are reading anymore, you continue to write away and attract a whole new legion of fans and introduce so many more people into writing.
Thank you so much.
What is a typical writing day like?
I treat my writing like a job, not like a hobby. So I take it very seriously in that I sit down at my desk at, say, in the morning after I finish my breakfast or whatever at 9:30, 10. I don't write continuously. I try and finish a chapter or whatever I'm working on right now. Then I take a break and I have other things also. I do a bit of freelance writing on the side, some proofreading, a sort of other bread and butter job sort of thing. I devote some time to that. But I have like a very structured plan sort of thing, which I try to follow. Sometimes I'm not successful because of various things, you know, family happening, or generally, you know, sometimes I'm just tired of writing. So I allow myself to take a break. I am my own boss and a very strict boss at that. So writing so many books and publishing them has been made possible because of my commitment and, you know, being very strict with myself.
Otherwise, it just wouldn't be possible. I mean, yeah, people talk of discipline, but unless you follow it, structure, discipline, and sitting down every day and getting something out is one of the keys to getting this going.
It's, you know, people think that writing has this very ephemeral air about it, and, you know, that it's something very arty and you need to have this muse and all that stuff. And right. I feel like it's my job. So I sit down, whether there is any muse or not sitting by my side, I don't know. So I just sit down and I write. I try to...
You summon the muse.
I don't know. I don't know. So I sit down and write and I try to, like, you know, focus on getting this story forward, especially since I do quite a bit of self-publishing and I have to decide my own, like, you know, my publishing schedule every year. For me, it's not just about writing a book. For me, I have to take into factors like putting it out there, whether this is going to be self-published, whether I'm going to approach a publisher. So, you know, making those decisions. There's a lot of conscious work that goes into being a writer today, for me at least.
Right.
I don't say this is the same for everyone. Like you said, everyone has a book in them, and I think that's very true. But at the same time, I'm kind of feel like I've gone beyond that thing where, you know, writing is not just my career, it's my job. It somehow pays my bills. This is all I've ever wanted. I just wanted to have a job where I can write stories.
And it's wonderful to hear a writer say that it pays the bills, because that is the other
I wouldn't say, you know, it pays all the bills. I would say, to a certain extent, I'm, you know, because there are certain privileges that I do have. Yeah. So I never advise people to take writing as a full-time job, unless they have certain things that, you know, that they're not, that doesn't affect them. Things like rent and bills and all that. So if a lot of those things are taken care of, then you can consider writing as a full-time job. And having said that, I have other things also. Like, I do a lot of other freelancing stuff on the side.
Okay.
So, writing pays the bills, but not...
You know, one of the things I saw a session that you had done where you said you came from a family of storytellers.
Yes.
I thought that that's a beautiful way of getting the inspiration going early on. So can you take us through some of those early bits?
My father was a sort of very instinctive storyteller. You know, he was an avid reader. And my mother is also a reader. She used to read. Now she stopped. They used to read a lot of books. And I think, you know, so when my brother and I were small, there was no 24-hour access to entertainment like how it is today. So we would trouble him sometimes, I think, especially because we were not in Bangalore. We had traveled to Kerala for his Ayurvedic treatment for something. So especially there, we were really bored, you know, in the evenings. So he would sit down and tell us these stories, which he claimed was from this big book, which I had never seen in our house, you know. So he kept saying it's from this big book and everything. So, and each day, so he would stop like at a cliffhanger and he would say enough for today. So tomorrow, you know, we would wait till that time when he would sit and continue the story. And later I got to know that there was no such book. He was making it on the go, you know. You know, my brother does that with his kids now. So he tells stories like that. He makes it up on the fly. I think, you know, like even my nani, my maternal grandmother also used to tell stories. She would recount stories that she'd read. She was also an avid reader. She would read all these Urdu stories and, you know, books and novels. And so she would sit down and tell us something that she remembered. So I think that tradition of listening to a story, listening to something and imagining it happening somewhere in your mind, because that's the thing about listening to a story is something that, you know, takes a little bit of effort for the listener also.
Yes.
Stay in one place and to not let your mind wander. So I think those things helped me in ways that I didn't really imagine.
And I think when you said that your father was an instinctive storyteller about, you know, stopping at the points where he knew he'd come back the next day. It's one of those well-known sort of
marketing
strategies that, you know, everything from serials to the earliest serialized novels that used to appear in magazines. You didn't have subscriptions, but you had this draw where the next week would have the next installment. And I think a lot of wonderful writers, especially in the vernacular, came out because of that constant draw that people had from, you know, whether it is Ponniyin Selvan or, you know, in Kerala, you had a whole lot of writers who did that. That was almost like a selling strategy. Where did your actual experiments with writing begin?
I have this typical angsty teenage growing up where I was not sure of what I wanted to do. And also for me, talking about, say, 25 years ago, no, more than that. So around 28 years ago, maybe, life was very different in so many ways for a young Muslim teenager who's a girl. So there were certain expectations from the family about, you know, getting married and having that. I want to do something, but I didn't know what also. Along with, you know, whatever when I was studying, and I got married when I was 19. So writing was a sort of way for me to just express all this angst inside, you know. I kind of started writing fiction after I got married. I had to finish college after my marriage. The year after that, when I was expecting my son, I was extremely bored, you know. So I just sat and I started writing some short stories for children and I sent it out. And I forgot about it because after my son was born, you know, we were running between hospitals. He was not well for a while. So I forgot about it. And then one of the stories got published and seeing my name. So I had been published in the paper before this. Those were like very small instances and I wasn't really sure I could do anything with that, you know, because anyone can get an article published in the newspaper, but it doesn't really mean anything. I started writing these short stories for a children's supplement called Open Sesame. And that kind of, I would say, gave me this steady impetus to keep writing and sending because they kept publishing. And then after that, I moved to writing fiction for older people. And I've had a fair share of my struggles. In a sense, getting people to notice my writing was not easy 15 years ago. So, you know, four of my short stories were in a collection, I think, which Deepa is also, her stories were also in that collection. That's how we got to know each other. So it's called Curtains. So after that, I wrote a novel. I didn't know anything about writing a novel. I didn't know how to plot. I didn't know what a plot was. As in, I vaguely knew it, but I didn't know how to apply that knowledge while I was writing. Characterization, things which you learn as you keep reading and writing. So I was reading a lot, and a lot of Indian books, actually, books by Indian authors. Back in the early 2000s, Indian writing was not what it is today. You know, you just had Chitra Banerjee, you had Shashi Deshpande and Jhumpa Lahiri. And so I read all their books. I even, you know, read even the obscure ones. I used to look for them because I felt that I couldn't write a story. I had to write a story that I could relate to. And for me to be able to do that in a space where you didn't really see that many Indian women featured, you know, unless they were NRIs. In Jhumpa Lahiri's books, most of them were NRIs. It took some time and, you know, some help from a few very good mentors. And I was writing. I wrote my first novel and I sent it out to a lot of publishers. I had to physically take printouts and, you know, courier it to them and hardly heard from them. Some refused. Some, like, you know, if I had emailed them, some had just rejected outright. There were a lot of problems with that book, I'm sure. You know. But I felt like I wish someone would take the time, you know, to invest the time to make that book better, to help me, you know, in that. But that didn't happen, unfortunately, because I don't blame the publishers. There are a lot of people who want to be writers.
Right.
Even though considerably less back then, as compared to today. Today, everyone wants to be a writer. No one wants to actually write anything. They want to have written something. Everyone is more interested in the publishing aspect. That perceived glamour is there now. Because yes. Writing is the most unglamorous job. You know, you get up and you may not have showered or anything. You'll sit and write and no one knows what you were looking like when you were writing a really good scene. And that's like, you know, you get away with it. The life of a writer. But when you're publishing, you're putting your face out in front of the world and everyone sees you. They have this impression of you. And I think that's the sort of impression that people have. So they see only that aspect. People from the outside see the last part where, you know, we finally, you know, the writer has finished the book and everything, and, you know, it's looking great and the writer is looking great and sit on a stage with some celebrity and launch the book. They don't see all the hard work that has gone behind that. It took me a lot of time to find a publisher, and that also was not a very good publisher. My first book came out with them, and then I subsequently published my second and third with Rupa. You know, I mean, I shouldn't feel foolish about it, but 14, 15 years ago when I started writing and, you know, trying to get published, I think everyone has that dream. You write one book and it gets published and you're like famous and everyone knows you. And obviously that doesn't happen right away. And then it doesn't happen even after the second, third book. And after that, you kind of realize, okay, that's not going to happen. I'm going to write because I love writing. And it's literally one of the only things that I can properly do, you know. So I might as well do it. So I wrote and I published. In 2014, I decided I'm going to take a 1 year break from writing. Because by then, I had finished writing 10 books. And only some 5 had been published. So that
is... You'd already written 10 by that time.
Yeah. And okay. I was very disheartened with the publishing world. I said, I can't just keep writing and wait for this, you know, to be picked up. And I don't even know if it's going to be picked up. I don't even know if anyone's going to publish it. What's the point of me accumulating all these books like this, you know? And right. Self-publishing was not something I was comfortable with back then. I didn't really understand how it worked. So I took a break from writing. And that year, I had 4 books come out, you know, so More Than This Biryani and a trilogy, which I had a young adult trilogy called Tamanna Trilogy. So 4 books came out and I was waiting for December 31st because I told myself, so if I take myself, I'm a very strict boss. So if I give myself break, I'm very strict about that also. No, you're not writing before 2015. Jan 1st, 2015, I just started, like, you know, so I was like, I can't wait. And I told myself, I am never doing this again. This 1 year break was a very stupid idea because I think, you know, in a way, writing is a sort of addiction also for me. You know, so I had deprived myself of that. So it's a bit complicated trying to explain how writing is.
No, just to interject, I think when you said you took that break, you actually stopped doing what you really like doing. It was almost like somebody who loves food. Yeah. And intentionally starve yourself to the point where you're probably bursting with ideas when you come back to it all over again.
Yeah, yeah. No, but that was like, I told myself that I'm never doing this again. At the most, I'll take a break for maybe 1 or 2 weeks or a month. But that's it. Never a year. Because I don't think I can last for that long without writing, you know. Writing has a lot of psychological aspects to me, for me, you know. So for me, right. It kind of feel very good about myself when I'm writing. You know, it's a sort of, I think it's a lot to do with, you know, whatever the psychologists must be calling dopamine and all that. It feels good when I'm writing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why should I deprive myself of that intentionally?
Absolutely. Now, when you're writing, when you're actually writing, go ahead and write, let's say, 1,000 words, 2,000 words, and then stop to review it. Though in retrospect, sometimes what you think is bad when you read 4 days later may actually be good, and vice versa.
Yeah. You know, it's not possible to take leave from a job just because you don't feel like enough. So I don't, I sit down and I, you know, if not specifically writing, then something, see, writing for me means there are so many things. I have all these notebooks where I make notes. So if I don't feel like doing the actual writing, I sit and make notes, which is mostly me doing a lot of stream of consciousness scribbling, trying to get things. So in that way, when I get back to the writing, the words flow easily, you know. So I have notebooks with me, which I kind of carry with me wherever I'm going. I use them to jot down my thoughts about that particular story. I am obsessed with notebooks. Notebook is just for this book, for this novel or this series, you know, so I'm not going to mix it up. So for that way, I have a lot more notebooks that way, you know. So I don't feel like when I sit down to write, it's not about the word count. The word count is something that I do subconsciously look at when today, okay, so I've written this much. But for me, it's more like, you know, if I'm able to finish a chapter. So the chapter could be like, say, 900 words, 1,500 words, 2,000 words, if I'm in the mood for it, and if it's going really well. But sometimes you have to physically stop because, you know, it physically hurts to write beyond a point. Experimenting with my own, you know, posture and my and everything. So I kind of know that I can't do beyond a certain point. And my body kind of tells me that it's time to stop. Because sometimes when I start typing, when I'm very tired, I start making a lot of typos. I know that, okay, this is my brain is also not working. My hands are also not working. It's time to take a break, you know, so...
So when it comes to your journey as a writer now, you've been writing for 14 years. What is the internal change? The reason I'm saying is that in a job with more experience, there are certain aspects of the job that get easier. There are certain parts of it which get very monotonous as well. And there are things that keep you going because of some little, you know, spark that came out from somewhere. Like you said, you probably need a break to come back to it to realize how much you like writing. Mm-hmm. When you're thinking of your characters, like you said, you make notes and then you're thinking about these characters and now you're almost assigning one notebook to each, you know, the plot points and then saying, okay, this is how it comes, which is, I think, a much more organized way of feeding that inspiration because then becomes, okay, I know that this particular thing. So you open that and certain, yes, you know, connections happen.
It's very tangible, say, okay, and it's not something that's just in my mind, you know, when I put it down on paper. And of course, my mind, I'm very liable to forget something that I might have thought of, you know. So when I look back, certain things pop up at me. As for what you asked about the evolution over the years, my writing has definitely become faster in the sense I physically type also very fast. So I think that kind of also helps. You know, so that, and I think, you know, being able to see the end of the book much before, like earlier, it was not easy for me to see the end of the book. And I would have a vague idea of how it's going to end. If it's a romance, it's obviously going to be a happily ever after sort of thing. But, you know, you have to reach that point. You have to create the conflict, a believable conflict. And then you have to make sure that that reasons for that conflict are explained and then that conflict goes away and then the protagonists can finally be united or whatever. It used to take me a lot of time to figure that out. I would go around in circles. Now I feel it's faster. I kind of have an idea of how to make things happen and, you know, what to do. I think the technique has improved. The writing is much more, I would say, contemporary. So as I've grown older, I feel like I've started writing younger. So I don't know.
Can grow much younger over the years.
Yes. Because when I was younger, I was writing about people who are, say, my age. I was very disconnected from all of it, you know, because I was a stay-at-home mother and I didn't know the world outside. I didn't really, you know, I did two jobs. I did a couple of jobs. I, you know, there was one job, but I had to go in twice a week. you know, that kind of really helped expand my worldview. And for me, all the jobs were all like fodder for my books, you know. So, you know, all the jobs and all the people and all the politics and everything. So I was like, you wait, you know, it's going to show up in some book somewhere.
It's going to appear in a book somewhere.
I was very disconnected from the world as such, apart from, you know, whatever I saw on TV and all that, and or read on the internet. And I was not happy about that in the sense, you know, I felt like, first of all, I've lived a very limiting life. I can't keep writing stories about just like about stories about people like me, you know, because that's not the point. If I am a writer, I should be able to live all these multiple lives. That's one of the advantages of being a writer. And I think as I've grown older, stepped out a lot more and observe people, I have younger friends. I think now that I'm older, I'm able to write about younger people. Like, you know, most of my heroines are in their 20s. When I was in my 20s, I was living a very different life. You know, I was a mother of two kids before 30. These are girls who are nothing like that. It kind of I feel very happy about having this altered ego sort of thing. I think that's been my evolution.
So how do you shift gears? Are you writing only one book at a time? Or are you saying that today let me write romance, tomorrow let me do horror?
No, I don't do that. I don't do that. Because, you know, what happens is when I'm writing, you need to get that voice of the character right. You know, I don't want to mix that up. I do end up starting multiple projects. And then I kind of let whichever it is take precedence, you know, the one that I feel more pulled towards. So currently, like, I would have three projects open in my laptop. Two of them might be romance. One might be thriller. I try not to mix genres when I'm writing. Sometimes it helps, you know, because sometimes I do get very bogged down by if I'm writing romance and romance at the time. End of it, I'm so fed up. I'm going to convert this into a thriller. I'm going to make them kill each other or something. You know? So to prevent that from happening, I see which kind of pulls me in. So I was doing that right now also. I was working on two books at the same time. One book has suddenly gone on to 28,000 words. The other one is still in the early, like 12,000 words. So I'm like, okay, I'll finish this one first and then come back to this. Right. But I've kind of brought it up to that point. So it's not like completely starting afresh. So I don't tell myself that let me finish this and then start. So if I feel like I need to start, I just start. And then I make notes so that I can come back to it. I am also a very instinctive writer in that, but I also plan things, you know. So if I'm writing about something, I make plans, extensive plans about what's going to happen in the book.
As a reader, what kind of books do you like?
I like reading crime fiction. I enjoy romance. I really like police procedurals, mysteries, and not that much of a fan of true crime, but I like crime fiction. Thrillers and those sort of things are like my favorite, all-time favorite. Not a very big fan of literary fiction because, you know, I feel like I don't have the mental energy and the time that it asks from me to sit down and put myself in. Because when you're reading literary fiction, you have to give a bit of yourself also when you're reading it, you know. One thing I don't read at all is nonfiction. My son reads nonfiction. Is this really my son? How can he read nonfiction? Yeah, and I love fantasy. Young adult fantasy, lots. I basically read whatever I can except nonfiction.
Okay. Are you a storyteller mom as well, like your nanny was and your father was?
Not so much. When my kids were small, you know, maybe I would tell them some scary story to scare them to sleep more than anything else, you know. So not so much of a storyteller mom. And, you know, they don't have the patience to sit with me and I don't have the patience with them. They're all grown up now. Both of them are grown up. So, you know, but with the younger kids, I enjoy, like, you know, reading with from a book and, you know, with my nieces and nephews and all that, I enjoy that. So
it's an amazing thing as to how you write fiction, but you also enjoy reading fiction. It's not that you're satiated and then you say, okay, I want to go back to.
No, you know, I come across a lot of writers who don't read much. They want to write, you know, but they don't want to read. So I find that very strange, you know, because it's like one of the basic tools to be a writer is to read. So if you don't read, what's going to happen is that you're going to get an idea. I have the best idea in the world. If you don't read, you don't know. You wouldn't know that, say, Stephen King would have written it like in 1975 or someone else would have written it long ago. So, you know, if you don't read, then you won't know what's out there, you know. And reading for enjoyment is something, you know, reading has a lot of goals associated with it today. Reading for enjoyment is not something that's considered very seriously these days. People have these reading goals and they have these bookstagrams where they will put up very aesthetically designed photos of a book that they've read. I mean, I love it when they do with my books, but, you know, I'm like, I hope that they've read the book also, you know. Because some of the covers
are... So almost like you're keeping it. Yeah, it's like you're keeping accounts of how much you spent and where did you spend it. Stuff like
that. You have a lot of these bookstagram accounts who are doing great work when it comes to promoting books, you know. But it's become this whole ecosystem, you know, where publishers send books to these Instagrammers and they will post, make a beautiful looking post. But I'm like, have you read the book? What did you think? You know, when I see the reviews on Amazon, especially, everyone wants to know when's the next book coming out. But I'm like, what about this one? What did you like about this one? So especially if it's a series, a connected series, which really does well on Amazon. That's what everyone wants to know. We want to know what's happening to the next couple. You know, when is their story coming out? So those are the things. I mean, so reading, I feel like, you know, to a certain extent, taking a backseat in the sense there's so much more competing for it, you know, as compared to before. Before, when we were kids, we just had reading. We didn't have, you know, we had TV would come at very specific times. And, you know, after that, there was nothing to watch on TV. So for us, our entertainment was TV. And today, entertainment is not even a question. There's so much and you don't know what to choose. So if someone actively chooses to read a book, it's amazing, I feel, you know, because they have put aside, you know, temptations from Netflix and everything else to sit with a book. There are readers today.
What about different forms of writing, meaning movie scripts and stuff like that? Is that something that you've ever looked at seriously?
I kind of want to, but at the same time, I think, you know, so I'm a huge loner when it comes to writing. I'm not a very collaborative person, although I have collaborated with two of my friends. And we've brought out two series together last year and this year. That's a different deal, you know, because these are my friends. So I can just tell them anything. But I think with writing for movies and all, it's an extremely collaborative effort. And also physically, you need to be present, I think, especially in India. You need to be in Bombay. You need to be part of that writer's room. So those are things I don't see myself doing, you know. I mean, if I was, say, 20 years younger, if I was, like, you know, unmarried and didn't have children. So maybe those are things. And if I was from a different, you know, a more open and, you know, open and broad-minded community and family, then those are things I could have pursued. But I don't feel like I've missed out on something. So I'm like, it's okay. You know, I'm happy with this. So someone make a movie out of my book and pay me good money, and I'll be more than happy.
More than happy to see that change now. You know, one of the things that I've found, which is really different between advertising films and, let's say, the real film or books, is that you have to develop character. The character is someone who starts out with a name and a job or whatever it is in a certain situation. And then you expand on that whole thing. You give them characteristics, you give them situations. Advertising relies on stereotypes. Mm. So you've got to make out in the very first, you know, couple of seconds as to where is this family, what is the relationship, and 30 seconds later, the story's over. Which is why probably a lot of advertising filmmakers have not really transitioned to the 2.5 hour format.
But a lot of advertising...
You're a very atypical writer, because I think in 3 months, if you finish a book, that is not the normal rate at which people operate.
Finish a book in 1 month.
Wow.
So 3 months is like when I'm being very easy with myself. Okay. Hey, it's okay. Aaj nahi to theek hai. Tomorrow I will write. Then I take 3 months. If I religiously sit and write every day, then I can easily finish a book in a month, 40 days at the most. You know, what you were saying about advertising, but there are a lot of people from the advertising world who are, you know, doing really well as writers. You have Anuja Chauhan, Judy also.
I think they come from
a very different, I think their approach to writing is very different. I'm very fascinated by it. So I'm a very different you know, like I said, self-taught and instinctive writer. So I find that very fascinating.
You're self-taught. That is one of the things which I believe is, it's almost instinctive. Because it's not as if you've got this whole, examples at home which you've followed. There was this nice podcast where Nidal Pandey talks about her mother, Shivani, sending out the serialized novel to Dharmyog. And she said her mother used to write at the kitchen table, and she used to write between meals, and she used to write between. So it's not as if she was able to set up a time. She had to find the time. She had to sit down and write and then do it. Writing is something that keeps you inspired. It's something that you need to do because it's, it helps you in so many ways.
See, I feel that, women writers have it very tough. We are handling multiple things which, male writers have no clue about. If you're a woman, if you're a mother, if you're a homemaker, whatever, if you're a career person, then it adds along with all these things. Like you're a home, you have a family, you have people who depend on you. I see male writers posting about how they lock themselves in their room for, say, 6 hours. Came out with this, I finished 3 chapters, 4 chapters, 5 chapters. In my head, you won't believe the sort of gullies I will give that man, because, you had someone cook for you, you had someone take care of the house, you had someone, whether you have kids or not, someone probably brought you food and gave it to you. If all writers had someone who would do all this for them, then everyone would be very productive. So I think, women especially, whatever they do, however they do, I am amazed, because each one of us has different issues in our houses, and it could be a sick parent or a sick in-law or someone, and you have to do that and do your writing along with that. So, your priorities tend to get watered down as a result. So in my case, I would say, I don't tell people, look at me, I'm so focused, I'm so disciplined. If I can do it, you can do it. I don't think everyone can do it, because, you need to have that sort of ecosystem around you that enables you to write. I had that, when my mother-in-law was alive, she would take care of the house for me. Until 2 years ago, everything was her domain. So I would just go, she would tell me, go do and write. So, when you have someone who takes care of that, and my kids are grown up, I have been writing from the time when they were climbing all over me. I've faced that also. They're just grown up now. So thankfully, I don't have to deal with that. So many women would write so many wonderful books. That's the sad reality of our times. I'm sorry I ranted about this, but this is a major rant for me. I feel very strongly about this, especially when I see male writers posting about their accomplishments, and I'm like, very few of them, I think, are aware of the sacrifice that goes into, maybe their wife would have, hard work that she would have done.
100% agree, Andadeep. Everything that you say is 10% true, simply because of their gender advantage.
Yeah.
Tend to have so much more going for them because of this. The strange part is that they don't think it's an advantage because they never have seen the other side. As far as they're concerned, that was the way they grew up. So it was not as if, things are any different after they get married. So that, I think, is one of the other aspects which never comes in.
So behind whatever the writing that happens, so much has gone behind all that, that it's, it's very hard for someone who is not a writer to understand the sort of things that you had to go through to reach there.
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying all women are suffering. To a certain extent, there are some people who can afford to have help, who can afford to have people taking care of the bills and all that stuff. So it's not like, it's not like a one size fits all. But overall, women have to struggle harder. Like a man says he locks himself in his room for 6 hours. If a woman was to do that, the house would be burnt down by the time she comes out. So there won't be any house left. So it's very sad, that, women have to...
I love your honesty, Andalit, because these are the things... You must find it a little strange that we've not discussed your books at all. We've spent...
No, I'm okay.
I'd like to understand from your point of view, is there a book that you really enjoyed writing, or something that after you've written, after all these years, you come back to and then say that, this is something where I think I kind of got close to what I was looking
for. I don't know how to explain this to you, Vinu, but when I am writing, I really feel like I am not myself.
Okay.
I really feel like there is some external thing. I don't want to sound like, you know, superstitious or something. But because, only because when I go back and read it, I'm like, oh my God, did I write this? You know, whether it's good or bad, I'm like, I can't believe that I was able to put that sentence together in that way, because I don't have any memory of creating that. I've enjoyed writing a lot of books over the years, and you know, each year something new I'm bringing out, so something is a new favorite. I've just signed a deal with a publisher, with Penguin actually, for a young adult novel that's late this year, I think. And that's one book which I really enjoyed writing, because I think, you know, I wrote about a very spunky young Muslim girl who goes out and, you know, gets what she wants. And given the situation in which we are, you know, writing about a girl like that itself is a form of rebellion, you know, because people, you know, they expect your heroines to be a certain way, especially when, me being an Indian Muslim woman writer, there's so many adjectives before writer for me.
Yes.
You know? My heroines, especially, people have this, you know, people assume everywhere. My recently released Jasmine Villa series, which is very interesting. What happened is, I self-published the series in 2019. Westland acquired it last year. And this year in February, they brought out all three books as paperbacks and ebooks.
Okay.
And they've done a brilliant job with the covers, with the marketing. It looks lovely. Since then, I have published quite a few books, because there is no publishing schedule. Whatever it is, I decide. I can publish three books today if I want. The readers were used to seeing all this. But, you know, the people who hadn't read so many of my ebooks, because as people have certain problems with reading ebooks, for them who, you know, they picked up those books now. And they are like, this is amazing. We have no idea how you were writing so well about all this. So you would have seen my heroines have evolved from what they were when I was writing and, you know, publishing with publishers, to when I'm self-publishing, where I don't have to answer anyone. So I would say, you know, the recent, this Jasmine Villa trilogy, the heroines are very normal Indian Muslim girls who have these very relatable issues facing them, stuff to do with marriage, and, you know, they fall in love and all those sort of things. I find it very hard to specifically pinpoint, you know, which book was more enjoyable, because some of the books were actually very difficult to write, especially the horror ones take a lot of time, because I always feel that horror is very subjective. Writing romance is a very universal emotion, you know. Everyone more or less feels the same way. They understand when you read about, you know, two people having chemistry, or, you know, gazes meeting or whatever, you understand it. But horror is very subjective in that what scares me might not scare you. So for me, it takes a lot of time to see whether this really works, whether it's coming out across as scary or whether it's just cheesy, which range of horror does this fit into. So I find it very fascinating and very tough to write also. So
how does it work in self-publishing? You actually do most of the work yourself?
When you're self-publishing, you're the publisher, you're the editor, you're the cover designer, if you want it. You don't need anyone. But what we like to do is we do hire people to do the cover for us. Editing, more or less, you know, we do each other's editing if we are working with friends. Mostly it's our own self-edits. As for formatting, it's all been made very easy. Technology has made it very easy. You know, you upload a Word document to a certain, say, software, and it'll take care of it. It'll create the ebook for you. You just have to upload it on the Amazon backend. So you end up doing all the work, and you end up taking all the money. So
the thing that I find most interesting, Anjali, is through whatever you've told me, you sat and listened, you absorbed in childhood, then you made your first little forays, and then figured out that, okay, this works, this doesn't work. And then you persisted.
Yes, persisted.
In the face of whether it was discouragement, whether it was the family situation, or whether it was whatever it is, you persisted and you managed to go through so many genres and experimented with that. Because I think the other part is that most writers tend to stick to whatever they find is successful and then say, okay, my audience will read this. This is what you're a writer who explores new audiences apart from yourself, which is refreshing. And the fact that you've taken to self-publishing so easily, because that's another thing where people say no, but then it almost is, it like it goes into character with whatever you've done. Is that a summation, or is it you disagree with parts of that?
No. I think more or less it's right. It's correct. You know, so I think self-publishing came to me at a time where I wanted to write and not be stopped by a publisher for telling me that you're writing too much and we can't publish all of this, because they have their own constraints. You know, no one can publish so much. And I was looking for a way where I could bring out my books and I could put them out to the world. And publishing, traditional publishing, takes a very long time. It takes a year to a year and a half from the time you sign the contract. But getting to the contract stage itself is another 6 months in the works, because getting a publisher interested in your work, them finally asking for the full manuscript, they like it, then they try to convince their sales and marketing team that this book will sell. Then they send the contract and then you sign it. And then after that, a year and a half. So I'm like, I don't have the patience for this. I mean, I will publish with publishers, because there is a lot of stigma associated with self-publishing in India, you know. People assume that because you probably didn't get a publisher, you self-published. When I started self-publishing, people were like, but you've been published with Penguin, with Bloomsbury. Why are you self-publishing? I said, because I want to publish and I want to keep writing. I don't want a publisher to stop me. Striking that balance has not been easy, but I'm trying. I was initially worried, if I self-publish so much, will this affect how a publisher looks at me? For them, if they bring out one book a year, it's more than enough.
Yeah.
And here is this person bringing out, say, 5-6 books a year. So how am I going to focus on the marketing for their book? So this year, when Westland brought out Jasmine Villa in February, I put a pause on my self-publishing. They have invested a lot and they are doing a great job in terms of marketing. So I shouldn't water it down by bringing out my own books, which might compete for it, you know. Those are certain things that I have to keep in mind.
You've so fluidly moved into this whole aspect of what it takes into marketing a book and how the cover design is important.
Yes.
And how it sort of gets the core of what the book is all about. In a bookshop earlier, okay, you see the front. Otherwise, you see only a spine. And these days when you're scrolling, you just see a set of covers. You're not really seeing much more. So the world has changed. And I think you've changed along with it. And what do you believe is the right amount of marketing?
I think writers need to market themselves, you know, especially so it's not easy. So publishers have a lot of writers. So they are not going to excessively focus on you unless you're a big celebrity, unless you have a very compelling story or something that they know is a surefire hit. No one can say what is going to be a surefire
hit. No one can say. Exactly.
So marketing is something that writers can't shy away from today. They have to be a part of it. But I also feel, again, that you need to strike that balance where you can't be so in your face with everyone constantly, you know. Like, you can't tell people constantly, like, you know, buy my book. People are going to hate you after that. You know, the moment they see you come somewhere, they'll run in the opposite direction.
Right.
So you have to strike that tasteful balance where you know that you are selling your book, but you're not selling yourself. And you have to figure out how to make sure that you come out of this still with a few friends left. So
right.
Writers, ideally, what we want to do is to be left alone to do our writing. You know? We don't want to be all this. But then everything comes with this set of, like, you know, expectations. So when you're signing the contract itself with the publisher, there is a certain stipulation about marketing, about appearing for book launches and all that. And when you're self-publishing, you have to do whatever you can. So, you know, we,
to push
because
it, yes.
Social media is free. So, you know, Instagram lives where we talk or take questions from readers. So interacting with readers has to happen over time, building a community of readers who want to know what you're working on next. It takes time. Nothing happens overnight. There is no such thing as an overnight success, because an overnight success has taken a long time to happen. You know? So I am not writing this one book and, you know, not writing anything else for another 2 years. Then of course, you can go ahead and do that, but it will be very difficult to survive in the self-publishing landscape, especially. Because here, it's like, if you're out of sight, you're out of mind.
Thank you, Anjali. Anything that you'd like to say to wrap up though we haven't spoken about your books, I think you've narrated your journey and whatever you went through in such lucid
Thank
detail.
You. I brought in something about my books anyhow. So I talked about, especially Jasmine Villa because it's recently released and all that. So I hope your viewers will pick it up because, it's a very nice 3-book series. Yeah. I think this was great. I enjoyed talking to you, Venu. It was, I hope that, you were able to, since we didn't specifically talk about my first job as such, because even though I did have a job.
But I think it's a continuum. Thank you, Andalee, for coming on the show. And it's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.
My First Job, the podcast, is a production from Ideascape Communications. Guest relations, promotions, and creative is managed by Deepa Ravi with occasional support by Venugopal Nair. Archiving and technical help is provided by LPS Jayachandran.